Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And this is episode number 146. Is it number 146? Okay, I did change the number, so I was just making sure. If we sound different, it's because we are different. I think we've not recorded in person before, but only a few times.
I was going to say, I think we had some bad weather situations once or twice in the past,
which where is it was like, hey. Basically, what happened this time was like it snowed, I mean, at least like 5 inches. I know on Saturday after the Ohio State Michigan game. Sorry, Kristen.
Yeah, it's okay. I didn't watch it. It was fine.
Yeah, I know. You're not, I feel like you're not as big of a fan as you used to be.
I'm over it. I'm more of a Lions fan. I've kind of always been more of a Lions fan anyway. And now they're not having as great a year as we thought either.
I know. So
like, hey, just fabulous.
Yeah. I was in a house full of Packers fans on Thanksgiving. Cool. That was not super fun. It could have been worse, but it was not super fun. At least I had Kevin's brother's fiance there. She's a huge Lions fan.
Good.
And so we just kept throwing looks at each other the whole time.
Yeah.
But after Ohio State won on Saturday, it was like snowing. We went out to the bar and it was snowing like crazy. And I know it got like, it like melted the next day and then refroze because I had like a layer of ice on my car.
Yeah.
And then yesterday it snowed again. And this morning, because I'm an amazing girlfriend, I got up and I brushed off both of our cars and started them and shoveled the whole driveway, which is kind of a long driveway, and both sidewalks.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And you're... I was pooped.
I can imagine. This is going to sound the slightest bit bougie, but we pay someone for that.
Oh, I mean, good for you. Honestly, as I was out there, I was like, it might be worth paying somebody to do this.
Yeah. Well, the guy that mows our lawn also does snow removal in the winters. So we just kind of keep him on.
Like a very smart business decision.
Yeah. So basically, they came out and salted twice before that storm hit. So honestly, I think they had much shoveling to do. The salt just melted away most of the snow. So they came out, ran the shovel over it a little, and it's been clear since. So my biggest problem was the street. Like, our street was not in great shape. And then all the reports said that everything was going to melt with the rain and then refreeze at 10 a.m. on Sunday morning. And I'm like, I am not driving all the way across town for me for church. And then I usually go to Karen's after. It's like, I am not driving all half an hour across town just to have it take me like 45 minutes to get home later. Like, I'm not doing it. I just said, I'm not leaving my house.
Yeah. And yeah. Didn't blame you one bit. I was like really tired on Sunday anyway, because we'd been going nonstop for like basically the whole week. And I think I needed a break. So here we are recording from the comfort of our own homes. You did not have to trek all the way across town. And we'll probably be doing this for the show recaps, because that way we can get the episodes to you guys a little bit sooner. That being said, the first double premiere, so obviously we all know the show comes out, oh my gosh, in like a week. It comes out December 10th. It will be a double premiere. I will be home in New York when it comes out to visit my dad, who is unfortunately very sick. I've been having a horrible year, you guys.
Yes, not a great year for
this. This has not been a fun year. So I'm going to go home, see my dad, hang out with him for a little bit. Still totally going to watch Percy Jackson. Sorry, Dad. Maybe I'll make him watch the first season. Ooh.
I was going to say, he'll need to sleep at some point. So that's, you'll be fine.
And then, so we're not entirely sure when we're going to be recording because of traveling, and Kristen's got some plans and stuff too. So first two episodes might be that weekend or early the following week. But then after that, I think we'll be able to be on a pretty easy schedule with recording either after the show comes out or like the next day or something like that.
Yeah, pretty close. Pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, but man, I'm excited. I'm
I
especially
am.
after discussing the trailer last week, and then we've gotten some new like sneak peeks and stuff this week. It's all been very like, oh my gosh. And then obviously this episode, we're going to be not recapping season one, but kind of visiting our favorite moments from each episode of season one. And I was like, oh my God, I love this show so much. Like, not that I forgot, but like just going back through it again, it's like, yeah, all of my feelings before were very valid.
Yeah.
So, if you would like to get into contact with us, please talk to us about season two, everything that you're excited for, any of the recent news that we'll be talking about in a minute, anything at all that you want to talk about, you can do so at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Instagram or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. We really appreciate that. News and updates. We've got some quick fire stuff to talk about. And before I forget, I just want to mention there was a Monday Night Football exclusive sneak peek at Percy Jackson season two. I cannot find it on the internet anywhere. I tried to
Great.
link it. I saw it live. Also, I don't know if this was on purpose, but it was the Patriots game. Okay. So Patriots, Boston, that's
Yeah.
where Rick lives. Haha, funny. They were playing the Giants. I don't know if that was on purpose, since the Giants, the Last Dragonians, are in season two, but if it
Yeah.
was, props to literally everybody because
Right, that is
hilarious.
Kind of funny, actually.
Classic. It was another like rapid fire, like whole bunch of clips. We definitely saw some things we saw already. We definitely saw some new things. And the one that really got me, which we also got a poster of, which I will link to in the show notes from the Instagram, is the sirens. So you remember how we were wondering, like there was that rock covered in like sea detritus. It was like starfish and some other things. It started moving and we were like, oh my God, what is that? Well, it's the sirens. And let me tell you, they're horrendous. They are like the angels from Doctor Who, the angel statues, but like goopier. I don't know. I don't even know how to describe them, but they're terrifying.
I mean, if I'm thinking of, yeah, the angels from Doctor Who, but like with like sea, like thinking of them with all the like sea creatures on them and like, yeah,
Yeah,
like
like
that,
barnacles and
right,
like,
like all that sea gunk, like
yeah.
that would be very scary.
Yeah, it was not fun, and I feel like it's going to be scary in the episode, but I'm looking forward to it. The posters also show the Giants, which is the Last Dragonians, and Polyphemus, which we had not seen before, I don't think. So
Yeah.
really awesome that we got like a good look at him. Very excited about that. Also of note is the Percy Jackson and the Olympians official podcast hosted by Arian. We did not have this last year, right?
I do not recall this, no.
But didn't we had some sort of after show? Because wasn't Liam?
It was Liam. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that if not that wasn't like an official after show, because it definitely was, but I feel like it was more like internet based, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think it was like the unofficial official. Like he was
Yeah.
partnered with Disney, but it wasn't like a Disney produced thing. He was just the one doing theirs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought that was that's interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, part of me, because look, a lot of like Teen Wolf did like an official after show, and there was a bunch of shows that like we've both followed very closely that either did companion podcasts or like after shows and stuff. And part of me is always like, but why not just get like the fans to host it? Or like, you know, somebody who, and I'm not even talking about us, I'm talking about like Seaweed Brain podcast, like they would
Oh,
be
yeah.
fantastic at something like this. It's always kind of made me feel like it would be such a good way to bridge that gap between the fans and the stars of the show and everything. But like, whatever, I get it. Everyone loves a companion podcast. The fact that it's hosted by Arian makes me really happy because he seems like such a genuinely like compassionate person and somebody I feel like would be really, really great at being in charge of this and like bring the excitement that a fan would bring to it.
Oh, yeah. He probably had more time to be able to devote to something like this than the other two, like in this season, because he had like scenes and stuff to do.
Right. Yeah,
he
yeah.
Probably had extra time that they were like, hey, we have an extra project for you. Would you like to also host this? And I'm sure he was like, yes, absolutely. I'm all over it. Because like, yeah, he probably doesn't have as much scene work to do this season. I'm sure they're
right.
going to work him in more than even the book did, but still, even if he's still only got a couple of scenes an episode, like, yeah, it won't be as much as doing the whole thing last year with everybody every episode. So, yeah.
Yeah. So does that mean maybe Leah will host next season?
I mean, that
they'll
that
just
would
switch
be
it
really
up each
cool.
season? That would be really cool.
That would be really cool. And poor Walker never gets to do it.
I know, really. You know who will get to do it after that?
Who?
Bianca.
Oh, that's sad.
I'm sorry.
No, but you're not wrong.
We've already seen like some clips from the show online. Again, I will link to that. It looks very official. They've got like leather couches and like some of the people are there in person. Some call in. I think at one point Rick calls in, but then is also there in person. So he's probably on for like multiple episodes.
Yeah.
And I'm just really excited to see what they bring to the table with that.
I'm also not going to lie, I'm in love with the logo right at the end.
Let's see if I...
Right at the end of the little trailer for it, there's a round logo, and it's really cool looking. Like, it's very branded to the show. It's not that different, but I don't know. I just love the 3D-ness of the whole thing.
The whole setup looks so... It almost looks like they're sitting in the big house a little bit.
I think that's what they intended it to look like.
I see what you mean about the circular, like, it looks like a shield, like it's very, yeah, that's cool.
Cool, though. I like the look of it.
Okay, so we also have two sort of, like, book news things to talk about. Nothing new, unfortunately, but still very exciting because Rick is the Indigo Author of the Month, which means that all of his books are 25% off for the entire month of December, including the Sea of Monsters Deluxe Edition, which I'm just obsessed with. And Kristen, I don't see why you wouldn't be obsessed with it either, because it's purple.
Purple.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. And I have the first one. It's very pretty. This is on my Christmas list, in case anyone's wondering. I have restrained myself and not bought it for myself yet, but
yeah,
it's very pretty. I think it's totally worth it in terms of being a deluxe edition. Rick has a video showing off the book on his Instagram that I will also link to if you haven't seen that yet. I also want to point out, to me, I thought this was like gigantic, huge news. Illumicrate is reprinting their exclusive Percy Jackson and the Olympians set.
It's not important or interesting news, because a lot of these exclusive book box versions of this stuff, a lot of them don't reprint. So it is saying something that they're willing to take pre-orders and do another printing of the Percy Jackson the Olympian set. Now I have to really look at my finances and see if I can afford it this time. Because last time I convinced myself that I didn't need it because spending the extra money was just not responsible. But now that I have another chance.
That's what I'm saying. Because I know a lot of people, like, after it closed the first time, were like, oh, man, I really regret it. I bought it for myself because you guys know that I can't hold back from buying all of these pretty Percy Jackson books. But pre-orders are open until January 2026 at 3 p.m. GMT. So you've got, like, a whole... this is supposed to be... There was supposed to be a date in there as well. Not just January 2026.
January 7th.
Okay. So you guys have like over a month to decide. You can ask for this for Christmas. You won't get it till after Christmas, but totally a great Christmas gift to ask for.
Well, and according to the Alumacrate page for it, it's expected to ship in June or July. So if you have a family member who wants to buy you a birthday present, if your birthday happens to be in June or July, you can just tell them if you pay for it now, it'll just arrive and ta-da, happy birthday to me.
Yeah, that would be totally worth it, in my opinion. I think the books are absolutely beautiful. I love the covers. They're so colorful. Yeah, I have no regrets buying it.
I really love the naked hardbacks too. Like the covers are really bold and pretty and like very graphic depictions of all of the books, but like the naked hardbacks are absolutely gorgeous too. They've got like a column and then whatever the book is, there's like theming around it. So like the labyrinth has like gears and stuff that are kind of all around the title. It's so cool. I know you have these. You've probably looked at them all.
I
But
have, but I never get tired of wanting
yeah,
them.
like they're really cool. So yeah, I will definitely be doing some very, very serious configuring of my finances.
Yeah, and my favorite thing, maybe not my favorite thing, but I have them, which I only started doing, turned around backwards so that you could see the end pages and the like picture that is all together, which I
Yeah.
think is really fun to do with those. So there is your second chance if you had, if you missed out last time and have FOMO this time. I say do it. This is your sign from the universe and the gods to just buy it.
Right. Just do it.
Last bit of news that we have this week is that Menchie's frozen yogurt, which I have never heard of before, will have a Percy-themed flavor. Guys, it's just blue raspberry. On December 10th. So you can go to your local Menchie's frozen yogurt and get the Percy Jackson Froyo, which honestly, I would absolutely do if the closest one wasn't in Michigan. It's
Yeah.
like basically near Detroit. So
It's
that's
in Ann
like,
Arbor, I think. Yeah.
okay, so that's like an hour-ish away. Also, I will be home in New York, and there's two, count them, two Menchie's in upstate New York. We're not counting the city. The closest one is like 2 hours away from where I'm going to be.
Oh.
So I will not be getting my very special Percy Jackson blue raspberry froyo. And I'm maybe a little upset about it.
I doubt I will be getting it either. I don't think we have any trips up into Michigan planned for me to be able to get it, but if I do find myself in the vicinity of a Menchie's, I will definitely be
Well,
looking
and
it
the other
up.
thing is, I think this is only December 10th.
Yeah, that was gonna be my next question is it
Yeah.
only for the one day or is it like starting that day? Oof.
I think it's on December 10th. So on a Wednesday,
Okay.
I
Probably
was,
not
you
gonna
know
make
what? If we had been home, honestly, I bet Kevin could he have brought me home some on
it.
his way home from work? Would it
I
have
mean,
melted?
there is one like on the way home from. Yeah,
Yeah.
he might have been able to. He could have just taken a
Well,
little cooler and filled it
yeah.
with ice and.
How silly would that have been? Anyway, that's not going to happen, but that's okay. So that's all the news we have this week. There's probably more. We're getting to the point where like it's kind of hard to keep up with all the little things going on. So if you find anything that we missed, anything you want us to talk about, just let us know, send it in, and we will talk about it next time.
Absolutely.
But for now, I want to get into our Percy Jackson and the Olympians season one rewatch discussion. This is not a recap of the first season because we've all probably seen it multiple times. And we've all read the books multiple times. So we don't really need to rehash what happened, but I really wanted to point out like the moments that stood out to us and any like questions we have still that are lingering that are unanswered, or any moments, especially like those additions to the show that weren't in the book, where we were like, ooh, would love to see more of something like that. So we decided to split this up per episode. So we'll just go back and forth. I've got the odds, and I'll start with episode one. I accidentally vaporized my pre-algebra teacher. And my first thought about this episode was, oh my gosh, Walker's so young. I know that we keep saying this, but like it's really jarring after seeing like the season two promos and like, you know, him even directly after season one, I felt like he just shot up like a weed. And it's wild how in season one he just looks so young.
It's going to be a little bit jarring when season two starts, just with how much he's changed. But hey, that's just kids. Like
Yeah, I mean, it
that's just kids that
happens.
age, man. They one summer they go home and they come back to school and they're 2 feet taller, especially boys. Like they just grow so fast.
Same thing with the Stranger Things cast. I know everybody's talking about that right now, how grown up they look in the final season and everything. But yeah, I mean, it just happens. And I think, thankfully, like the people who put together Percy Jackson knew what they were getting into. They knew that this was going to happen. And I feel like Percy, like, because of his personality, like, even if the kids get a lot older than what they're playing, I think it's going to be pretty easy to, like, make it still feel youthful and everything. Plus, we're only talking like, you know, 16 instead of 13 or, you know, something like that, where it's not a huge difference.
This isn't Cory Monteith in Glee, who was actually only 2 years younger than Matt Morrison playing the teacher, and like he was 28 playing 16. Like, what are we doing? Yeah, this
I
is
mean,
like a
same
couple of
thing
years.
with the actress Crystal Reed, who played Allison in Teen Wolf. She was quite a bit older than everybody else, and I feel like it's obvious once you. Okay, if you noticed a blip, no, you didn't, because we just had some issues with Zoom, but it's totally fine. We were talking about how crazy it is that children get older. But you know, I guess it's better than the alternative. That was a dark joke. I'm gonna move on. I forgot.
Yes, it was. Okay.
I forgot how incredible young Percy is. I mean, I didn't, but it's just like he's still that little like eyebrow lift that he does when the headmaster's talking to him and being like, "You're maybe crazy." And he's like, "I don't believe you, old man." It's just like he did such a great job.
So good. Oh, yeah.
The other thing that caught my attention, I was trying to look at the pilot from the point of view of somebody who's watching it for the first time and like trying to like go back and, you know, because I was already a diehard fan when we watched this the first time, but I was like, man, the CGI in the show is actually really amazing. You know, I'm glad that they got a decent budget for it. I think everything holds up. I think that, you know, it's still really funny. My favorite part, believe it or not, is not any of the funny jokes, but in the first episode, when they're at the cabin, it's just such an emotional conversation between Percy and his mom, talking about like she's trying to tell him that he's a demigod and that there are monsters after him, and he's got to go to this place called Camp Half-Blood where he can be safe. And he's like, why are you saying all these things to me? Like, he feels like she's making fun of him almost because he just doesn't understand that all this stuff is real. God, you mean like Jesus? Still a very funny line. That moment between them is so emotional on both of their parts. Both actors are incredible in that scene. You learn so much information, and that's when the action really kicks off. And I feel like in a lot of ways, it does not slow down until you reach the end of the season.
Right, from Grover, where are your pants to the final fight scene at the end of the season. Like, yeah, it's just boom, 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 boom,
Grover, why is there half a goat in your pants? And
boom.
then
That is
Grover
it.
turns to his mom and says, "You didn't tell him." And she just goes, "You're early."
It's so good. It's
It
so good.
is really good.
The sass. It's like, listen, you can't show up 20 minutes before you're supposed to and expect me to have told him all the things. Like,
Yeah, exactly. So basically, my final conclusion about the first episode is that it's still one of the best pilots I think I've ever seen. I've seen some rough pilots back in the day. There are a lot of shows where you're like, yeah, just get through the first episode or just get through the first season and it gets good. And from the beginning, I feel like episode one just, I mean, it starts off with a bang. The episode did so much heavy lifting in terms of the backstory, in terms of exposition without making it boring, I might add, and action to get us where we needed to go. And I think that's a really difficult thing to do, because even that moment in the car when Grover is explaining what Sally didn't get to explain yet, you're on the run from this monster. It's still like a really tense scene. There's some jokes thrown in. There's some emotional parts thrown in. It's still like super dynamic, and it just doesn't weigh you down. And I think that's very difficult to do. So kudos to the entire Percy Jackson team.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I agree with you. The pilot episode for any show is a tough episode. It's a needle you have to thread very carefully, because you, especially for non-fans of the books, like, they have to create a pilot that for fans of the book hit all the high points, the things that people want to see. But then they also have to make it wholly standalone for people who do not know what Percy Jackson is. They need to explain enough that everyone understands where it's all coming from and what's happening and who Percy is and all, you know. Pilots are hard, and they absolutely nailed it. Like, I, you know, I haven't watched, I showed my husband, and he really liked, you know, the pilot. Like, he is not big into any sort of fantasy, really. He loves sci-fi, but he's more that side of things. And he really loved the pilot. He thought it was really good too. So, like, he knew nothing about Percy when we first watched it last year. So it's a well-rounded pilot from all sides. And I love that. They really did knock it out of the park.
I was talking to my mom on the phone the other day, and she was like, by the way, Disney Plus knows, like, you're gonna say Percy Jackson season 2 comes out soon, aren't you? And she was like, yeah, I'm really excited for it. And I hadn't, like, reminded her about season 2 in probably like months. Like, I told her it was happening, but she's been keeping an eye on it. And I was like, that's so adorable.
That is really cute. I love that. All right, so we'll keep moving right along here and step into episode 2. I Become Supreme Lord of the Bathroom is one of those episodes that I didn't realize all of this happened in one episode.
Yeah.
But it does, because they have to get out of camp by the end of this episode. Like, episode 2 is literally all the stuff that happens at camp before Percy, Annabeth, and Grover leave. So there's a lot to pack into this episode. And then they still found room to add extra stuff too, which is really cool. I love the stuff with Grover. We've talked ad nauseum about how we love all the extra things they added. We'll, I'm sure, probably talk about the Grover Aries moment from later in the season. Mm-hmm. But, like, in this episode, we get that scene with Grover and the council, and, like, him and his mentor, the green lady.
Yeah, the, like, the nymph.
Mother figure, nymph, like, something. We never got
dryad. I think she's a dryad. Yes.
We never got, like, a firm definition of who that was, but I love all that extra stuff, because it really does just build Grover to a more well-rounded character. He's not just that guy who got Percy to camp and then takes off next, you know, in season 2 to go be a searcher. Like, it really does round his character out really well in season 1.
And I think it's really important for the show to depict characters that aren't human but aren't monstrous in terms of, I mean, the whole show does a lot. I mean, we'll talk about this with the episode with Medusa, like, who's the monster here? You know, who's the hero? Who's the victim? All of that kind of stuff. But every once in a while, I actually forget Grover is not human, because he's so much like the other kids. But then he talks about, especially during going to Vegas and releasing all the animals, and he's like, you know, he forgets, oh yeah, the humans could be in danger now, because he's like, well, at least the animals are safe. That's the important part. And it kind of reminds you that, like, he does not see the world the same way that Percy and Annabeth do. Yes. And I think showing the dryad and reminding us that there are creatures out there Same thing with like Chiron and stuff. Like there are creatures out there other than the demigods and the monsters they fight, really builds out this world so much.
Agreed, definitely. And watching that council scene reminded me that, like, this was an added thing. Are we gonna see them again? Like, we saw at the end of season one, like, we see Grover get his searcher's license. Will we get a flashback to him meeting with the council and getting that? Will we get any? Because I personally would love to see more of the council. I'm curious if that's something that in season two we may get a glimpse at. Or if
It
maybe
would
that's
be
something down the road.
so funny to see Percy go up to the council and be like, "Where's Grover? You need to help me." And maybe his like dryad mother lady is like, maybe like I can just imagine Percy getting like really sassy with the council and she's like, "Shh, don't say that." That
Right.
would be really funny to see him interacting with them.
Like saying all the wrong things, or
Yeah.
yeah, that would definitely be a fun way to kind of incorporate that, but yeah, who knows? I also watching the montage of Percy like trying out archery and like trying the forges. I realized that we didn't get a lot of things that he's bad at, but the things that he's bad at, he was really bad at. And I'm curious if maybe we'll get like the anti-montage this season of like all the things he's gotten better at. Like in that chariot scene, how much are we gonna see of Percy's fighting skills like dramatically improving? I'm very much looking forward to seeing if we end up with a hey, Percy got better at a lot of things very quickly.
Yeah, I would love that too.
Right. So yeah, this is the episode where we see the capture the flag stuff too. As I was watching it, I could not help but get distracted by the colored tassels on the rope bridge, and I'm curious, like, what are they? Why are they there? Will we ever get an explanation, or is it just to be pretty on camera, which I completely understand.
Yeah, I mean, it is very pretty.
But like, do the campers do that? Is it for, you know, when something good happens? Like, have they been tying them there for decades? Like, what are the tassels? Or again, is it just pretty? I don't care. It would be a fun question to ask if I ever get an opportunity to. As I was watching that, Annabeth puts her hat on and disappears, and Percy is left alone in the woods. And then at the very end of his battle with Clarice, she takes the hat back off and is standing there. And I'm curious if she actually really was watching him the whole time, or did she just lie and tell him she was, of course, there the whole time, but like wandered off to check on everything else that was going on too.
My guess is either she was absolutely there the whole time or she was watching Clarice the whole time, because I think that was like her whole thing was she knew Clarice was going to go after Percy. And so she was either standing by Percy to make sure he didn't actually get seriously hurt since he was a complete newbie,
Yeah.
or she was tracking Clarice as Clarice got closer and closer to Percy. But I think the important thing is, and this isn't like a super obvious thing, but looking back on it now, Annabeth trusted Luke to capture the flag completely. Like this was such an important thing to her. She really wanted to win this, but she let him actually grab the flag and kind of get all the glory. Like it was her idea, but he was the one that did it. And I think that goes to show, the layers of trust that she has in him and how she doesn't even think twice about having him on her side until the very end when
Yeah,
there's a
that
really
makes
good, like, bookend between these first couple episodes and that final episode that I think you're going to bring up, that I really noticed this rewatch.
Yeah, that is a really good point. Annabeth, as much as she wants to go on quests and wants, you can see how like thirsty she is to see more of the world and to do all that. It's not because she wants all the glory either. Like if, you know, Luke was going on quests, you know that a portion of that would be he wants the glory. He wants to prove things. And like, yes, Annabeth wants to prove things to her mother, absolutely. But like, I don't think her priority one is getting all the credit for all the things all the time. She just wants to show what she's capable of. And you're absolutely right. Like, she did a really good job of that in this episode because she knew Clarice would come after Percy, and by separating him from everyone else, it made Clarice a non-factor. And with her not being on the battlefield, Luke had everything he needed to be able to get the flag and win the game. So, yeah, it's a genius thing that I don't think I really noticed. Like, I didn't really pick up on that. I would love to see if the other kids, like when other parents start claiming kids, I want to see if the other symbols are as big as Percy's. I'm thinking of an owl the size of like a Volkswagen above an Athena camper. Like that would be a big owl if it was as big as that. It made me laugh as I'm looking at the trident, just thinking like some of those symbols would be really big. So that would be definitely funny somewhere along the line. Another point that kind of popped in my head was Clarice. She really does come across as a textbook bully in this season, especially in this episode. And I'm so looking forward to what they're going to do with her character in season two. There's just so much growth that happens for Clarice in this book, and I am anxious and dying to see where what they're gonna do and how it's portrayed on screen.
There's a couple of clips from the trailer, but I think there was also a clip in the exclusive thing that I really hope ends up online sometime, of Clarice. Like, I feel like she's, I don't know, she looks very sincere. She almost looks like maybe she's like praying to her father or like something like that. But they're already in the trailer. I feel like we see layers to Clarice that we don't see at all in season one. And I am so looking forward to that because I think she's a fantastic character. I think the actress is amazing. I know we were like a little
Yeah, we
worried
were.
when she was first cast because she didn't look how we had pictured her based off the description in the book. But like, body type aside, she has got her fire, and I'm just really excited for season two.
Definitely. Yeah, I 100% agree. Dior has jumped out of the. She is Clarice. I mean, that is one thing the movies got super wrong that the show has gotten very right. I definitely get Clarice from the books from Dior, even though she looks completely different from what I pictured when reading it. So, yeah, she's absolutely nailing it. And season two is going to be chock full of really great character development for her. And I'm very, very much looking forward to it. Okay. And the last thing I had from episode two was Grover is smarter than both Chiron and Mr. D, and I think that's hilarious. So Percy, they're standing in the big house, and Percy learns about like all the goings on, and they're basically telling him like, Percy, you have to do this, and he goes, no, Sally Jackson is my mother. I don't care about my dad because he doesn't care about me. Why should I do any of this? And then Grover walks in, and they're trying to threaten Grover, and he's like, guys, if he can save his mom, he'll do this whole thing. Why are you making this harder than it needs to be? And it's just so funny that Grover sees what Percy needs to be able to motivate himself to go on this quest. Like, he does not want to save our world because he doesn't know our world yet. Like, he just got here and you're already asking him to go save us. Like, he doesn't care about us, but he cares about his mom. And his mom is not dead, she's just taken. And he can save her, and the council told me that. And so, why are you guys making this harder than it needs to be? All we need to do is give him the right motivation. And as soon as that happens, you know, Percy changes his tune and says, when do we leave? It's like, I just love how smart Grover
It's a
is.
great end to the episode too. And yeah, I mean, and how brave Grover is, because Mr. D already shot him down once and gave him, you know, the god eyes where he was like, don't do this or you're gonna regret it. Luckily, all Grover ended up doing was shoveling some poo.
Right. But yeah.
Speaking of which, Episode three, we visit the Garden Gnome Emporium. This is, oh man, this might be my favorite episode. It's so hard to pick one, but this one is a huge standout for me. In the beginning of this episode, it's where Percy chooses who's going to go on the quest with him. And I really loved the moment of Percy choosing Annabeth because she'd be willing to sacrifice him to ensure that the quest is complete. And even Chiron is like, yeah, that makes sense. That's actually a good point. But I feel like he earned a lot of respect with her in that moment because you can see her sort of look at him and go like, oh, you kind of already figured me out. You figured out how all of this works. I really like.
And I think she admires the strategy of that. Like it's,
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
like it's not an emotional decision. He's not picking her because he thinks she likes him or she's his favorite. Like, no, he's picking her because A, he knows she's up to the task, and B, if she has to shove him off a cliff to get something done, she'll do it. And yeah, and she can 100% appreciate someone thinking through the logic and the strategy of something. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And really, this episode, as much as it's about the gods being the monsters and the monsters being the victims with Medusa's story, this episode is really about the relationship between the trio. And Percy and Annabeth butting heads the whole time is kind of funny, but also you kind of like, I think, at least for me, I'm in like Grover's shoes where I'm just like, can you guys please just put aside your differences for 2 seconds? Because we have something way more important to like deal with at the moment. And at the end of the episode, after they've defeated Medusa, Grover said what needed to be said, even if it hurt their feelings. And I really liked that, again, he was really brave to stand up to them. It gives me, maybe we mentioned this the first time, getting a little bit of deja vu, but it's giving me Neville Longbottom vibes, standing up to your friends. It's like, it's a really difficult thing to do. And Grover, he held his tongue like the whole episode and he tried to not get in the middle of it and then had to put his hoof down. and I just really loved that about him. I hope that this sort of continues in season two. Because what makes Annabeth and Percy's relationship so satisfying is that they had to work for it. They were not friends in the beginning, and then they became begrudging friends, and then they became best friends, and then they started dating. Because once they get to that point, they're unbreakable, and that's the best part about them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Standout moment, obviously, is Percy shipping Medusa's head to Olympus. I am impertinent. Very good moment. But I think my real favorite moment is Medusa's speech about who the real monsters are, whether it's the gods or, whether it's somebody like her. The actress was incredible in this episode. Her dress was incredible. The snakes were incredible. The whole setting of her house was incredible. Everything felt so real and tangible and beautiful and old, timeless, like classic. And I really loved that. And I think that it's so important that we got this episode where Medusa says, maybe you don't know everything you think you know about me. Maybe you were told the wrong thing. And Annabeth really needs to hear that lesson. And I think that's really great.
And I think that comes into play later with Hephaestus too, when Annabeth's talking about how like Percy's different. Like, there's that definitely comes back into play. Being reminded that like everything she knows and thinks she knows about each of the gods because of her mother isn't necessarily the whole story. And I think that does sink into Annabeth's like thinking in this episode, and it gives her more to contemplate later. I think it's definitely something that really sinks in. Okay, so episode four, I Plunged to My Death. So this is the episode that starts with young Percy and mom in the pool, and it ends with Percy in the river. And I just thought that was kind of a fun bookend. Like, they're starting with young Percy in the water, kind of learning how to swim and trusting that. And then it ends with Percy learning he can breathe underwater. Mm-hmm. And it's just a fun, like, way to really think about this, like, how far he really has come in a short time. Like, as a kid, he was scared to even just be in the water. And now he's comfortable enough to be a person in the water. And now is learning that, like, because of who he is and who his dad is, he has nothing to fear from the ocean and nothing to fear from the water in general. So that really stood out to me watching it this time.
And him telling his mom to breathe and the Nereid telling him to breathe again, like, there's so many parallels. It works really well.
It really does. And it's the perfect, again, adding that little scene at the beginning informs so much to what Percy's going through. And it lets you really just see the whole picture. Really love that. So then the rest of this episode, it's the train and the monsters and it's getting to St. Louis and all of that. There's just a lot of action and a lot of things going on, but we also get some really, like, poignant, important moments in there too. I love that in this episode on the train, Percy gets to see that there are magical creatures beyond just the monsters. Like, he's seeing the centaurs, like, running across the field, and it's reminding him that, like, amongst all the chaos that monsters cause in his life, it's not just about those two factors, you know, like, satyrs and centaurs and so many other creatures in this world are being affected by all of this too. And they just want to be able to exist. And I like that we got that reminder in this episode amidst all the chaos. We also kind of got a character moment from Grover there where he gets to talk about nature and what makes him tick, and it gives us more of Grover too, which is also, you know, any extra Grover moments I think really just did so much to round him out in season one.
Yeah, I think that Grover very quickly in this season becomes this person who cares about animals, cares about nature. He's kind of got his little soapbox that he stands on. And I feel like amidst everything, it's really important for Percy to hear that, because you're right. Not all non-human, non-demigod creatures are monstrous. And you have, you know, satyrs and centaurs and a whole lot of other things. And I think it's really important that when Percy steps into this world and gets hit in the face in every which direction with all this stuff going on, that there's a moment where he realizes, like, yeah, you know, there are a lot of scary things, but there's a lot of good things too.
Definitely. I think my favorite moment though was Annabeth and Percy having their little, like, heart to heart, and Percy talking about the prophecy and, like, giving them lines of the prophecy and him really thinking hard about what each means and who's going to do what. And Annabeth basically looks at him and says, like, stop trying so hard. Like, fate is fate and it's going to work out the way it's going to work out. So just do what you need to do to get through things. And in the end, you'll see what everything meant. Like, don't use that as your guidepost. And, like, just the way she, like, looks at him and just this, it's the message behind it is stop trying to fit into the prophecy and just let the prophecy fit into what we're doing. Like, stop trying so hard.
Yeah. There's a lot of friendly teasing between the two of them in this episode, and I really loved that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We also get that one moment in the train where the Chimera runs down the hallway and we see the little dog. That kind of just reiterated, like, the mist for me. And I'm curious if we'll get more interesting moments with, like, what the mist is showing versus the human, you know, what the humans versus the demigods are seeing. Because that was a nice reminder that, like, oh yeah, all of this chaos is going on, but there are still regular people in the train who have no idea what's going on. And they're seeing a dog running down the thing. And, you know, so I am interested to see if the mist makes an appearance in season two.
I would imagine it will with the Lastragonians because they're just kids at the school. So that's going to be an interesting transformation.
And then the last thing that stood out to me was during the battle with the Chimera, Echidna tells Percy, don't fight it. It'll just make her angry. And I'm sitting there like wondering, like, has that ever worked with a demigod? Did a demigod ever listen to someone saying, just die, it'll be easier. You're just going to piss her off and then she's going to make it hurt more. Like, has that ever worked? Like, why would that work? Like, that's
insane. I feel like that would go against everything a demigod stands for.
Right? Like, what are you saying here? Like, did you really think that was going to work? Absolutely not. So, yeah.
She was a great Echidna, though. She really, I think, embodied that, like, motherly figure while also being super creepy at the same time.
Yeah. And otherworldly in the stillness that she brought to that. Like, she did not have extreme reactions. It wasn't Ares throwing, you know, anger eyes all left and right. Like,
yeah.
She was a different kind of strong mother figure type, and I really appreciated that. So, yeah.
I think that's one of the things that makes me the saddest about these types of episodes is that they're, in a lot of ways, one and done. So, like, Medusa's probably not, you know, we're not really going to see her again. They could add something in later, but, like, a lot of these monstrous characters, a lot of the special guests, they're in and they're out and then it's done. And it's like, oh, but they were so good. I would watch like a whole season with them.
Right. Agreed. And that's a testament to the actors that they're getting to play the gods and the adults. Like it, they really have pulled out all the stops. And I'm just head over heels for the people they've been able to get so far.
For sure. Next up is episode 5, A God Buys Us Cheeseburgers, another standout episode. This one is very emotional on, like, so many levels. I think I forgot that part because, to me, like, Ares is kind of the standout part in this, just because I really like the actor and, like, his portrayal of Ares, that I kind of forgot some of the smaller details of the episode. But Annabeth and Percy's hug, first of all, the first hug, because they hug again at the end of the season, was, like, very emotional. I mean, it was surprising and a little awkward, but it was also, like, she is just so happy that he's okay.
Yeah.
And then the other part of that is the chair and Annabeth's speech to Festus after. I think that's my favorite scene in this episode.
I mean, how is it not?
Yeah.
She is redefining, like, she is convincing a god to undo his own trap because this guy that he's got trapped is worth undoing it for. Like, you don't just do that. Like, people don't just talk the gods out of things. And she managed to reach Hephaestus so eloquently that he didn't seem to think twice about it either.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a very quick decision.
Yeah. And that's not what he was going to do when this started. When he walks into that room and Percy is solid gold, he wasn't about to undo any of that. Like, no, it was Annabeth who convinced him that this kid is different and we need him. And yeah.
Yeah. Thank goodness that it was Hephaestus and not like Zeus.
I know, right?
Or Athena or literally like anybody else. I feel like they wouldn't have done that.
I agree. I agree.
Speaking of Annabeth and how amazing she is, her fascination with the amusement park, that was when I remember watching this for the first time and I was like, oh, she's a professional. She knows what she's doing. She is Annabeth. And not that I didn't think she was Annabeth before because she had the vibe from the get-go, but that like curiosity about how the amusement park works and what it was for, that is like the other side of Annabeth that I think you don't always get to see because the camera was kind of like from her perspective, like we were kind of, you know, with her in that moment. It was a quiet moment where she was, Percy could hear her, but she was talking to herself. And you don't always get to see that when you're just reading a book from Percy's point of view. So I super loved that.
And I kind of love, isn't the very last scene of, or one of the very last scenes of the season, isn't that with her saying, she's gonna go to Disneyland. Like, it's, again, there's a little bit of a, almost a bookend kind of fitting in there, where she's learning what an amusement park is basically for the first time in, you know, in episode 5. And then by the end of the season is gonna go see one, like, that's not abandoned and run down and all of that. So yeah, I love that too.
Yeah, there's a lot of full circle moments in this season, yeah, and that's always very satisfying. I also really love Aries. I don't know if I'm alone in this. I mean, I know that he's kind of the villain here, and he's not really meant to be likable. I mean, I don't like him. I don't think he's a good person, but, like, he is so, that actor is so good at embodying Aries and making him a little charismatic and a little douchey and, like, funny, but also scary. I feel like he's one of the few, probably him and Lance Reddick, where I've really seen the, like, oh, haha, this is a silly god. Okay, wait, he could smite me where I stand. Yeah. And I feel like, love Jason Mantzoukas, truly do. I feel like he tried to do that and could not pull it off as well as these two other actors did.
I think they absolutely knocked it out of the park casting-wise, especially for Aries. His size and just general demeanor gives him this extra ultra-powerful feeling compared to the kids, especially compared to the kids.
Yeah.
It gives him something else. Mr. D, Jason Mantzoukas as Mr. D, is a fantastic Mr. D, but I don't necessarily believe all the time that he's the scary big god who's going to smite you the minute you look at him funny. Like, he's Jason Mantzoukas. He's funny, he's witty, he's, you know, smarmy a little bit. But, like, I'm not as afraid of him. I genuinely think Aries is terrifying. And I think that's kind of as it should be. Aries is one of the scarier gods that these kids could come across. And I really love how they cast him. It was,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, like, people that have come out of pro wrestling to be actors, and some of them are really great, and some of them started out terrible, John Cena, and then have since created an entire...
The Rock was not good out of the...
He was not good out of the... Yeah. Either. But, like, they found their niche and they found things they're good at and they've settled into being really great actors. This guy's knocking it out of the park from day one. I've never seen him in anything else. I don't know if he's acted in other things.
He has, like, acted in other things, but I don't know how long that list is. But yeah. I mean, he's very good.
He's got this character in, you know, in his soul. Like, he really embodies it so well that I'm so fortunate that we got him to play Aries.
Yeah, for sure. I don't remember off the top of my head. I know he's been in at least one other fairly big show.
Okay.
But I still, I mean, yeah. And how perfect is it that a professional wrestler is going to be playing Aries? I think that's just literally the perfect casting.
It helps with that physical intimidation factor. Like, he's a big guy anyway, but, like, he has that presence that you would need in a wrestling ring, that you step in there and you have to just feel like you are overpowering and just, yeah. So I think it all just lends itself so well to this character.
Yeah, for sure. The last thing that I want, well, last two things I wanted to bring up, still with Aries, is at one point Grover says, "Thank you for the cheeseburgers and the emotional abuse," which, hilarious line, but yes, also makes me think that they're not going to shy away from his abusive relationship with Clarice, which we may or may not see in season two.
With us getting both perspectives from Medusa and them not shying away from the complicated history of Medusa's story, I think that also leans into this. I don't think they're going to shy away from the abusive relationship that Clarice and Aries have and watching her overcome some of that in season two and learn to fight back and, you know, all of that. So, yeah, I 100% think that's going to be a theme throughout season two.
Yeah. And jumping ahead to season three, I'm curious if they'll reference this episode once Aphrodite comes into the show, because obviously this was all sort of about her as well. And I would love maybe like a little bit of a flashback or of a little bit of a funny moment, maybe between Ares, Aphrodite, and Hephaestus, or like even between Percy and Aphrodite, where he kind of brings up what was going on. I think that could be a really funny callback.
Okay, so that takes us to episode six, which is We Take a Zebra to Vegas, aka the Lotus Casino episode. The first thing that jumped out at me watching this again, in the show, there's a lot of adults in the Lotus Casino. And in the book, it's mostly kids, right?
I feel like it was more like an arcade than like a casino.
Okay, so like they really did lean into the this is Vegas, this is a casino. We have to have adults from all time periods, not just like a bunch of kids. Because I just, it did stand out to me that there were a lot of older people. It looked like a casino and not like just an arcade. So I thought that was interesting. We know we're gonna see the Lotus Casino again, not really in season two, but probably in season three, right? Is when we go back.
Like for flashback
Well, that's what
or
I'm wondering, is we may see flashbacks since we know that it's such a big part of Bianca and Nico's story, and it's a familiar place for us because we've seen it now. I'm curious if we'll get a flashback to their time at the Lotus Casino.
I would really like that. I think that would explain a lot too.
Yeah. And since we're familiar with it, it'll be a callback to, oh, that's how their time, like, that's how they lost so much time. That's how all of this happened. Like, I think it'll help explain a lot of their story to non-readers and to people who are just fans of the show too. So the other like major part of this episode is Hermes. We get some stuff with Grover, and it's not, it's like his uncle's friend, I believe. It's
Someone from the
Ferdinand's friend,
council, maybe,
someone he
or
recognizes, another satyr that he recognizes. But honestly, most of that feels like just and it's all it is an example to show what happens if you're alone in the Lotus Casino versus if you're there with someone by your side the whole time. Because Annabeth and Percy know their relationship isn't affected by the Lotus Casino. They remember everything about each other and all of their interpersonal stuff, but they just lose time, and they also start to lose Grover by the end. So I just thought that was, it's not like what happens with Grover is like important because it does introduce Pan a little bit, but it's not like vital. Because you're really just kind of seeing the illustration of what the Lotus Casino can really do. But yeah, Hermes is the biggest hurdle here. Seeing him react, I mean, they basically have lost Hermes' attention by the time, you know, they're ready to get to the heart of what they need from him, and Hermes is basically done with them, and Annabeth throws out "We're friends of Luke," and it turns on a dime. Hermes drops everything, takes them to a special area to talk to them because she drops Luke's name, and it just, that moment stood out so much to me just because we know how absolutely vital the Luke, Annabeth, Hermes, like that whole circle of people, including Luke's mom and everybody later on, we know how important that all is going to come into play in the grand story. So seeing how intensely Hermes wants any information about Luke that he can get beyond just what he gets being his father and watching from afar, meeting people who know and love Luke, who care about Luke, like that's all. You know, you can see that he's willing to soak up any and all information Annabeth has to offer. And so, therefore, he listens to them and offers them the help he can offer. Yeah, looking at the difference between Hermes and Annabeth's solutions to fate was also really interesting to me. Annabeth's solution was to stop looking so closely so you can see the grand picture, kind of like what she talked about with Percy earlier in the earlier episode. Whereas Hermes sees what fate is presenting and he just abandons course because he knows, he feels he's only going to make it worse. And I love that neither solution is really necessarily wrong because Hermes was only going to make things worse. We know that from the story. But like Annabeth also, it's a valid way to kind of look at the idea of fate, like stepping back and taking a look at the broader picture to see what all is going on is also really, like, vital to understanding how fate works in this universe. And, like, I don't know, it was a really big moment kind of to see all of that going on and to see all of their different perspectives on what fate has to do with all of this. And yeah. And then that kind of triggered me wondering if Clarice's take on quests and fate and all of that will be even different from both of them next season. I'm curious how she will kind of interpret looking at a quest and looking at a prophecy and what that means and how, you know, how she sees it. I'm sure we'll probably get her perspective on that. And
yeah, I feel like she's going to be a lot more pragmatic about it. And I also think she's going to be like, just do the hard work, just fight some monsters and you'll come home a hero. And like, not that I don't think Clarice is dumb at all, but I feel like she has a one track mind, which means that sometimes she misses the things that like Annabeth would catch, for instance. So yeah, I mean, I think her take on things will be quite different, and especially with her father breathing over her shoulder, like, what's that gonna be like?
Well, and like, it's her strength is her abilities. Like, Annabeth's strength is strategy and planning and outsmarting the opponent. And Percy is figuring this all out. But you're not wrong. Like, Clarice's strength is her skill and her ability to fight. And I do think you're right that that's going to guide a lot of her actions in season two. So that'll be really interesting to see unfold for sure. And the last bit of this episode was Percy, like, getting to the shore and walking in to, like, greet his father, and he finds out his dad's not there and all of that, and they're given the pearls. Seeing the difference, the juxtaposition of him being in the river versus him being in the ocean here, and how calmly he just, like, takes that whole moment in, was really cool for me, so I liked that bit, too. But, yeah, that's pretty much episode 6.
Yeah. And I think that transitions really well into episode 7, because they're kind of just like, let's keep going. We got a lot of, you know, we don't have a lot of time and we still have a lot of rubber to burn. So we find out the truth, sort of. Still so satisfied that we got the mattress shop scene. That's something that was missing in the movies and something that people really wanted, even though it was pretty brief and it wasn't quite what it was in the book. I'm glad that we still got that whole setup. And of course, that leads to the underworld. Grover with his little squeaky ball to keep him calm. And I love how even when his hand was off screen, you could hear it squeaking every once in a while. I was like cracking up at that. I love Cerberus. He's so cute. I love how Annabeth was so smart with him. That was really awesome. Too bad he ate one of the pearls. That was quite unfortunate. So I have to say, it's actually funny that this is happening right now, because I'm reading a book right now where there are flashback scenes. And I think the last book I was just reading, there were also flashback scenes. And I have to say, not a huge fan of flashbacks.
Sometimes, I agree. I concur. That's me too.
Because it just takes you out of the story. And sometimes it, like, yes, it's good for the background information, but I would almost rather have that information come up organically between the characters in the present and have them have a conversation about it than us have the flashback. But I think in TV shows and movies, it's a little different because it's more visual, it's more dynamic, more interactive. I really love the flashback scenes in this show because, one, young Percy is just so good. Two, as you've pointed out, like, there's a lot of full circle moments that I think would not, like, those moments in the present wouldn't be quite as satisfying if we didn't get them in the past. Mm-hmm. And especially the flashbacks where Percy's being kind of a brat and his mom is doing the best she can. I kind of love that she gets mad. I love that she yells at him and she's frustrated and she cries and she still loves him so, so much, but she is really struggling being a single mother. And that is so realistic. And I'm just glad that they didn't make her this like paragon of perfection, you know,
Yeah.
where she was the perfect mother all the time, who always said the right thing. And Percy was never a bad child to her. You know, maybe he was in school, but to her, you know, because they're so close that you would think that they never fought. And that's just not how that works when you're a kid and you're a single mom.
Is this how teachers feel? Like she's trying to teach Percy all this stuff that she knows he needs to know, but he has no idea he needs to have this knowledge. And so she has, you know, probably basically a little checklist in her head of like the most important things that need to be a part. He needs to have working knowledge of Greek history and all this extra, you know, like she's just got this list of things she knows that his life will be easier later if he knows it. And so she's working all of that into his life too. And that can't be easy. Like, in addition to just raising a child not to be a jerk and raising a kid to be a good human, she's also got to raise him to be a good demigod and to be able to survive. And like, yeah, she had quite the job. And yeah, I love that we get to see her being a person and is like, you know, fed up and totally done and just, you know, so frustrated that he's not, of course, just doing everything she needs him to do. Like, of course he's not. He's a kid. And
Yeah. And I think that scene in the diner where he was like, I would never do this to you. I mean, first of all, kid, you don't even know what you're talking about. You're like six and you don't understand anything. But she kind of, the fact that she just gets up, kisses him on the head, and then goes off to like cry and pay the bill, I think probably encapsulates what so many single parents have done. Because I know, like, I remember being a kid, and like, not to toot my own horn, I was a pretty great kid. I like never got into trouble. I was a great student. But like, my mom and I are very, very close, but we fought a lot because we're very similar. And I know I said some horrible things to her when I was a kid because kids don't think about how their words affect another person. And the fact that like parents have to just kind of take that on the chin, good parents, because there are bad parents out there who don't, but like they kind of have to understand that kids just don't see the full picture. And Sally, more than anybody, sees the full picture of what's going on, and she can't tell Percy about it, and that must be so difficult. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, just so unbelievably hard.
Yeah. I want to circle back to the diner at the end because that's my favorite moment. But first, I just want to mention Hades. And I kind of hate saying this because I am 100% in on the show, but I don't know how I feel about his casting. I think out of everybody, I don't think he's a misstep because I see moments of it, and I think the dialogue is very good, where he's like, I don't cahoot. That was very funny. But he doesn't give me this kind of like sinister vibes that I always got from him in the books. Or like, honestly, maybe I'm conflating that with the personification of Hades that you see in a lot of other media. Because I do kind of feel like in Percy Jackson, the gods are a little bit silly, a little bit scary, but I always leaned a little bit more towards scary with Hades because he always felt very serious to me. And I didn't quite get that sinister vibe from him, but he's got the pragmatism down, which is a very big Hades characteristic, that he's very pragmatic, and I thought that came through really well.
I definitely hear you. I think of all of the adult casting, Hades is probably the biggest departure for me. Like he's the hardest to kind of wrap my mind around that being Hades. The rest of them embody their characters so visually, so like physically that it's kind of easy to like step into those and be like, okay, yeah, he's doing a great job, or that, you know, what's her face says Medusa, like she just absolutely embodies Medusa so well. So I definitely hear you. I like that they kind of went polar opposite of Lance Reddick with Hades. Like, they, not just, like, skin tone, which is the obvious, but, like, he's the guy who plays Hades, which I know him, but I can't think of his name at the moment. He's shorter.
Jay Duplass?
Duplass, yes, thank you. He's shorter. He's kind of stout, whereas Lance is tall and imposing. And, like, just there's something visually about seeing, kind of thinking about the two of them playing Zeus and Hades that really just screams, like, opposites. And I love the visual of that. I don't know if, since we didn't actually get to, like, see that, you know, because of Lance being gone and a new person stepping into his shoes for season two, I don't know how all of that's going to end up playing out in the end. But I love the idea of Jay Duplass being, like, a different kind of Hades, because they didn't want to just make him gaunt and tall and skinny, because then, you know, he just wouldn't feel as different from Zeus as you would have, you know, you would have seen the similarities between the two of them. So I kind of love the idea of Jay Duplass as Hades. I've seen him in too many, like, kind of like stoner bummer roles, that it's hard to kind of see him as the powerful Hades. And I hope that when we see him again, maybe we'll get more of the strong, the god, the man behind the underworld. Yeah. Like, I feel like there's more opportunity coming for him to really embody the sternness and the sinister quality that Hades always seems to have. So I'm interested to see how he may shake out later.
Yeah, and we know we won't see him in season two, but that we will see him in season three, and maybe opposite little Nico, we'll be able to see that sternness a little bit more. I think that you bring up a really good point in terms of, like, opposites, but and maybe it's because we never got to see Hades with Zeus, but I actually really see that with Poseidon and Zeus, because you're right, Zeus is tall, thin, imposing, whereas to me, Poseidon is a little bit shorter and stockier. He's a little bit bulkier. And the juxtaposition between Zeus and his perfectly pressed suit and and Poseidon's wrinkly little shirt that he's his got hanging wear. Out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, to me, that makes them feel so much like opposites. And even the way they speak to Percy, you know, Zeus is very scary. He's very like, I'm literally going to throw a lightning bolt if you don't shut up right now. And Poseidon shockingly gives up an entire war, you know, puts his ego and his dignity aside for his kid. And I think that I think they went a long way to show how different those two are. And I'm super curious once Thalia comes into it, if we'll see a different side of Zeus.
Yeah, I am definitely intrigued to see the Zeus-Thalia dynamic at some point. I want to see how that unfolds. Yeah, definitely one of the more interesting things. And you're right with, like, Nico and Hades, too. I want to see how that works, too. So, yeah, a lot of parental child relationships that are just going to be really fascinating to see unfold in the next you know, couple of seasons here.
And speaking of parental child relationships, the fact that, and this is sort of my favorite moment, there's a lot of good moments in this episode, but this one was, again, I feel like a departure from the books, because we got this, like, flashback. Sally goes up to the register and she drops a match in the little ice cream flute or whatever and calls Poseidon, which, first of all, he comes running. He shows up in 0.2 seconds. I would too. Sally's amazing. But it's interesting that she calls for him. I don't think that ever happened in the book. I don't even know if they've ever referenced that in the book. I get the impression that this is not something she does all the time. I get the impression that this was kind of a big deal that she called him. And the fact that she's just like, I don't know what to do. I'm about to give up. This is so hard. And he gives her those, like, kind, gentle words saying, you're doing amazing. just keep going. It'll all be worth it in the end. Really kind of makes you understand what kind of dynamic they had and like why they got together in the first place.
Yeah. Seeing those two characters spend time together on screen, I think is one of the more like absolutely necessary additional moments of this season. Because you don't really see the two parents together ever in any of these. You don't see the godly parent and the human parent like spend time together. And for Percy's, I feel like it's even more important to see that Poseidon may not have been able to be there every day, but like when Sally really just lost her will to continue to go on with all of this and needed that support, he did come at the drop of, the drop of a match. He showed up
That was
and
good.
I do what I can. He showed up and he, gave her what she needed to keep going and to raise this kid to be what they all needed him to be. And yeah, it's a really, really important moment that I would never have thought we needed to see. But I love that we get to see Sally and Poseidon just sit by each other and have a moment together. It's yeah,
Yeah,
so
I
cool.
think after all of the talk about how terrible the gods are, we had to see them in a good light every once in a while. And Poseidon's kind of the perfect person to be able to do that. So, yeah, it was
Agreed.
necessary.
Definitely. So that takes us to episode 8, the grand finale, aka The Prophecy Comes True. The first thing that really jumped out at me was the ichor effect when Percy draws first blood and we see Ares leak that golden. Oh, it's so cool. I don't think I really noticed it the first time, the second time, the third time I saw this. Like I knew he drew first blood, but I don't know if I really like saw the effect. And it almost glows, but not too much. And it looks real. And I was just really impressed by that special effect. It's very brief, but it jumped out at me.
I also couldn't help but notice like he got him in the Achilles. Like, I don't know if that's like if that was just kind of a ha-ha thing, if that was like important or like what, but I thought it was kind of perfect that it was there.
Agreed. Yeah. It's kind of a picture perfect moment, gotta say. My next note is I noted earlier that Percy says, like, I'm Sally Jackson's kid. My dad can kick rocks. He hasn't been around. I don't care about him. And Grover is able to turn him on a dime by turning his motivation to I can save my mom. Percy goes from I'm Sally Jackson's kid, my dad's never been around, to this is too important. I have to put my life on the line to stop this war. I'm gonna walk up to Olympus, look Zeus in the eye, and say, this needs to end. And like that is one heck of a character arc for any character to go through. He is a very young child. And for him to have that kind of growth in a single season and for it to feel natural, I never questioned Percy's motivation for going to Olympus in this final episode. It feels like it is coming from deep in his soul. He believes that going to Olympus and stopping this war and, getting Zeus to focus on where who the true enemy is here is worth everything. And if it means he dies, he dies. And like it's so powerful to see that he really did go from I could give a crap about all of this, I want my mom back, to I will do whatever it takes to save everyone.
I also think it's really important to point out that he goes from I am Sally Jackson's kid to I told you that you would know who I am, and the big swell of water, son of
Yeah.
Poseidon, comes. And like, he's not saying, like, I'm no longer Sally Jackson's kid, but he's embracing the fact that he's Poseidon's kid too. And that is another, like, very natural progression that worked out. I mean, that like little speech he gives to Ares, that moment, oh, it's
Yeah,
so good.
it's so good. That whole fight scene is just fantastic. But yeah, I will say that Olympus, I think I have to blame the Disney movie, like the I always just picture it more shiny and golden. Like it should feel almost godly, but otherwise it's pretty perfect. It really does feel imposing when he walks in there, and I really love the visual of Olympus. It's just for my brain, it needs a little more shiny. Oops, oh well. The next note for me is Lance. He is just so incredible as Zeus, and it is just absolutely heartbreaking that this is what we got. I'm so glad we got what we got because he does such a good job of not only showing the power of Zeus, but like he really embodies the wholeness of that character, the ferocity as well as the quiet power, the restraint that Zeus does occasionally show. He just does such a great job in that one scene, and I cry a little every time just thinking about how like we're not going to get more of that. But I am very, very excited to see the new Zeus and how he kind of establishes himself, since we have to have a new Zeus. So I'm curious to see how that works out in season two and beyond. I don't understand how Percy is not more scared of Zeus. He like is looking him in the eye when Zeus is ready to thunderbolt, and I'm like, how are you not cowering in a corner? How are you not running away? Like, whatever. But Poseidon, of course, steps in at the perfect moment and saves him, and yeah. So, but I would have been absolutely gone. That lightning bolt would have hit me in the back of the head, in the middle of my back. It would definitely not have hit me in the face because I would have been on the move. I think my favorite moment, though, despite all of the Lance, is Poseidon saying, "Your mother taught you ancient Greek." Because that line is so charged. Poseidon is in one little line. He says, like, of course she did. Like, she's awesome, and of course she taught you ancient Greek on top of everything else. But it's also like, damn, I miss her. Like, you can feel him saying, like, I miss her so much. Like, Sally, of course she did. And then also is like, she's one heck of a mother. Like, you can see him kind of having all these reactions in one little line, including like, she's also pretty hot. Like, you can just, I don't know, there's just something really charged in the way that whole thing is acted, and I just absolutely loved it. So it's definitely my favorite moment of this episode.
I think that my moment with that same thing is when Percy asks him if he ever dreams about Sally, and Poseidon never really answers, but you can read so much on his face. Like, he did such a great job.
He gives great face. He has so much going on, and it's just in a look and one little line, and you can just read all of this character intention, just broadcasting. Okay, and then the last scene of this episode is pretty important, or not the last scene of the episode, but one of the biggest scenes of the episode with Luke and Percy and the lighting for that scene. Luke's eyes are glowing gold from the fire pretty much the entire scene, while Percy is being showered in all these colors from the fireworks. And there's just something about the juxtaposition of the two light sources that reminds you that, like, Luke is going to be this Kronos puppet, and the gold just kind of really reminds you of all of that. Whereas the fireworks just keep Percy feeling like this active role in the conversation. And it's just a really cool lighting setup. And I'm honestly really glad they went with something like that dynamic.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that they got Charlie to play Luke because I think he does such a great job of making him like very empathetic because even though he's fighting against Percy in this moment, you can see that he like really believes in what he's saying and that he doesn't necessarily want to hurt Percy until he absolutely feels like he has to. And the fact that you're kind of like, well, I do see a side. Again, he's going about it the wrong way, which is what we've said about Book Luke for so long. And the fact that Charlie encapsulates that so well is like perfect.
It really is. And then the very last thing is that I love that Grover's searcher's license is just a flower. It's so satyr of the council that that is the license. It made me really happy. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's cute.
So cute. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Instagram at Prophecy Radio Podcast or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and we really, really appreciate them. You can leave us questions, comments, or ideas for content you want to hear in our episodes at either of those places. We love hearing from you guys, and we're definitely excited about Percy Jackson and the Olympians season 2, but we're always excited to see what you guys would love to hear us talk about next. Next time we will be discussing the premiere. We will probably separate the two episodes. We'll do them as two separate because it's just way too much to try to fit into one episode. So we will be discussing season 2, episode 1 in our next episode for sure. I just said episode 7 times.
Now it's really no longer weird. A real word.
It's fake. It doesn't actually exist. we are really, really, really excited. Please reach out and let us know how excited you guys are and what you're most excited to see this season, because we are definitely thinking about all the things, including the reveal of that wedding dress, for sure. So, yeah. Until next time, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.